join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and I have a slew of crew in front of me for tonight's crew chat. Pretty excited on what we're going to be conversing about. Going to get the normal admin stuff out of the way first. So with that, I'll give kind of updates on myself. So depending on the timing of this release, it may or may not be super time delayed, but spent a couple days up in the Ocala National Forest doing a bit of turkey hunting. I'm not going to tell you if I was successful or not. You're going to have to listen to the podcast that we are going to release for that. If it has not already actually been released, we'll see. In addition to that, shooting for spring bear here pretty soon, followed on by heading up to Missoula for the BHA rendezvous. I'm going to be doing a little cooking up there. So if you get the opportunity to come up and do a little meet and greet, be sure to shoot us an email and let us know. I'll be there. Would absolutely 100% love to connect with each and every one of you. If you're in the area, camping, having beers, attending events, whatever, just let me know. We'll set up something and have a beer and a chat for sure. So with that, those are kind of all the updates I got going on, trying to take a look at the fall season and plan my roadmap for the hunting and fishing year, but looking forward to all the exciting things that are to come in 2021. Corey, what do you got for us?
We did get a hot tip from a listener on a previous episode, the Essential Equipment for Wild Game Cooks. In that episode, we briefly talked about vacuum sealers and vac sealing like stock and stuff. But we got a hot tip from a listener, Josh McCown. He said to hang the vac seal bags off the side of the counter and support it with your hand when you seal the stock, and it won't draw up that liquid. So, hot tip.
Yeah, it's a pretty good tip.
This past weekend was our annual fishing trip that I take with a friend from grad school. We get together and we go out trout fishing. My dad usually comes with me, and we actually recorded a podcast on Friday night. But it was Saturday that I had a good day. I mean, we landed a bunch of fish, but the highlight of the day was a nice like 17 or 18 inch brown that had just had the most beautiful colors, and it was one of the most beautiful fish that I ever caught. So that was just like the exclamation point on the end of the on a great weekend. Great weekend.
Is that one on Instagram yet?
I think it was just in stories. I don't think it's on the page, on the feed.
Yeah, we had I did see that one in Corey's story, and I did repost it as a story, but I haven't put it on the main page.
Super, super beautiful fish. I am curious, though, Corey, how many fish did you catch on Saturday?
I lost count, but I'd say between Friday and Saturday, I caught over, I don't know, 60 trout. So it was a good weekend.
Wow. How many did you keep?
We kept five. The limit's five in Pennsylvania, and normally I'm catch release, but we kept five to make fish tacos. But we recorded a podcast. We talked about it in there, so I don't want to give too much away. So
nice. That's fine. Yeah, don't want to give away the content there. Colin, what do you got for us?
Hey, everybody. This is Colin. Just checking in for the social media and our community aspects of Harvesting Nature. Really appreciate all the engagement that we're getting on the Facebook community page. Our very own special guest today has been very active in that, which we really appreciate, and we've gotten a lot of great feedback about his recipes, our recipes, every little hot tip that we get in there. It's pretty awesome to see that community page really expanding the way we want. And As for me, it's pretty slow up here in Oregon right now, just preparing for our bear hunt coming up in a couple weeks. Went out to the range the other day, patterned my shotgun for turkey in case we come across any of those, and sighted in my rifle just to make sure. I switched up some ammo, went to a lighter grain, so I wanted to make sure it's still on. Also had an interesting encounter with some rural Oregonians, if you care to hear about the encounter.
Let's hear it.
The range that we go to, it's very, I'll just say it's very Oregon. It's on a state forest. It's two gravel pits. One's about 50 yards. One goes out to about 150. And rolled up to the 150-yard range, and there's a family there, and they pretty much told me that I need to go find somewhere else, that they live right down below the hill. And they never get to use this spot because they got all these people coming in from Portland or Washington wanting to use the spot. And I said, well, sorry, I live right here. And they were like, yeah, we recommend you you go find somewhere else to shoot. So I didn't press the issue. I know. I didn't press the issue. I didn't really want to argue with a bunch of people with guns. I went and found a different spot. But just that was my first encounter like that. Somebody laying stake on public land out in the middle of Oregon, which if you watch the news for the past few years, isn't really that uncommon for Oregon, at least in the limelight. But yeah, it was an interesting experience. Ended up zeroing my rifle, so you know, it's a non-issue now.
Good. Is that the same one we're going to when I come out?
No. Luckily, we'll be about 8 hours south. So
that's good. That's good. Well, Corey, what's going on in the world of Adventures for Food podcast?
Adventures for Food comes out every other Sunday, and it's a lot different than these episodes. It's a 5 to 15 minute story, just one hunter or angler telling their story, like they're around the campfire, kitchen table, telling their friends. They are a nice, quick listen. Great. We got some great stories. A recent one is James Cameron hunting in a national forest in eastern North Carolina. Has to fight a bear off for his deer that he harvests. So that one's an exciting one to listen to. But if we have any listeners out there that want to tell their story on the Adventures for Food episodes, please email us at whatscooking@harvestingnature.com.
Nice. Yeah, and I would say some other things too. It's awesome. We love hearing everyone's stories, so it's great to get engaged and listen to your stories and have the ability to share your stories. It's super cool. We're actually, as I see it, there's a lot of bear stories, which I find really, really interesting.
We have a couple more bear stories in the queue.
Yeah. It's interesting how the bear stories travel to the top and interact in the hunting and fishing world. Both good and bad, I guess. Depends on if you're the bear or the hunter.
I wonder if that has something to do with just like their overall charisma. You know?
I want to mention our biased coffee program. But, you know, we have that. All the hard work we do. We love caffeine. We love coffee. So if you feel free to go donate a buck or two to our coffee fund, we're much appreciated. Great way to say thanks for all the podcasts, videos, articles, photographs, delicious recipes that you see over on the Harvesting Nature page. It's a great way to get in with that. And then also Colin's plug, our friends over at Allen Company are gracious enough to share a discount code. So if you go over to buyallen, that's BYALLEN.com. And use the coupon code HARVEST10. That gets you 10% off at checkout. So great way to do that. They have a bunch of cool stuff. I've been using their turkey gear now for the last couple weeks. Pretty impressed with it. So that's good stuff there. But we're going to roll from our admin stuff. We've got Jim Hazley on. And Jim's going to talk to us tonight. A little hot news going on in the Florida Peninsula that I think we want to bring to light to the listeners out there. So, Jim, first, if you'll introduce yourself, you're a contributor for us, but you wear a man of many hats. So, please, please introduce yourself to the guests?
Thank you, listeners. Well, thank you very much for having me on. You do me credit that I probably don't deserve, but I'm a BHA volunteer for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. I do like to write, and I really appreciate you guys being willing to publish some of my scribblings. I hope some of those add value to somebody's life. But the subject that I'm really here to focus on tonight is a threat to two WMAs in Florida, two state forests, and some pretty serious conservation land that's actually up in the Forgotten Coast, up in the panhandle of Florida, just east of the Choctawhatchee Bay or west of St. Joe Bay. For those of you looking at Google, I suppose I can give you a coordinate. It's 30.311721 or -86.087864. Won't geek out too much on that, but to understand the issues that we're dealing with, kind of have to understand that development in Florida is going to be something that's just going to come. I don't want to make this sound like an anti-development conversation, but we do have about 250,000. The population of Florida grows by about 250,000 people a year. So to kind of put that in perspective, you know, Wyoming's only got about 1 million people in it. So it's like bringing the entire state of Wyoming here every 4 years, or the entire state of Louisiana here in about 20 years, or the entire state of Pennsylvania here over the next 50 years is the kind of growth we're looking at. So it's natural for counties to want to develop mobility plans. And I think that's actually a pretty responsible thing to do by and large. So Walton County, which is the area that we're concerned about, has actually put together a pretty well thought out mobility plan with two pretty serious exceptions that arguably walk in the line on ethics. One is they've proposed what's called the Seagrove Forest Road that will cut right through the single largest unbroken portion of forest that's created by the Point Washington Forest and also the Deer Lake State Park. What they're planning to do through this really pristine area is throw a 175-yard corridor with fence on both sides, of course, to retard the progress of animals across the two lanes of paved highway, and then a third multimodal lane that is still kind of uncertain as to whether that's just going to be pedestrian traffic, or in other places in the mobility plan, when they call a multimodal lane, is actually a lane that's supposed to handle things like golf carts and shuttles. So it's really uncertain as to just how much concrete they're talking about driving right through a state forest in a place that several different state agencies have actually invested millions of dollars into longleaf pine restoration, etc. The forest itself it's got some really unique habitat in the forest and around the forest. It's fantastic home for all the things that we like to chase, things like deer, turkeys, quail, ducks, pigs, really diverse. For the folks that, like us, like to go out and hunt for our dinner. But then it's also got some species sometimes we as sportsmen don't always give credit to, like the American kestrel, gopher tortoise, flatwood salamander, and then some fairly rare plants like the white-top pitcher plant, which may not sound exciting when you're talking about flowers, but if you've ever seen one of these things, they create a flower that looks very much like a pitcher. It's bright white. It's like a foot tall with these beautiful purple red veins that run through it, and it's threatened, as is some of the Curtis sandgrass that only appears in Florida. So when you're just talking about a space like that was set aside for passive recreation and for all the reasons that we need public land and we need conservation land, it just sets a terrible precedent that you want to drive a road through there. A lot of that area is already bisected or fragmented by a couple of roads that already passed north-south between County Road 30A and US 98, if you want to look on a map and figure out where this is. But it literally, in some of the conversations we've had with the planning manager, They want to put a road there just because about every 2 miles along this entire mobility plan, there's a north-south road. So they want one there too, and it just seems like conservation land is it's just not a priority.
Seems to me like it would, man. That, sorry, Corey. Seems to me like that's a terrible place to put a road. First off, and like out of all the land to try to put a road in the county, like why try to put it through the middle of the WMA? I don't know. That bothers me.
It gets worse than that because they've been working on this project for a long time, and we've received letters that were submitted to the county as part of the conservation, the due diligence from Department of Forestry, the Department of Environmental Protection, Florida Fish and Wildlife, all either saying outright, we oppose this plan, or expressing grave concern and then listing of a litany of options, and all of them expressing ideas as to alternatives as far as widening some other roads. There's a county road 393 through the area. There's another place to the east called Water Sound Parkway. I don't want to get into the politics because it'll put your listeners to sleep. But the biggest problem is the precedent, and it's really heartbreaking that a county is moving forward with this despite pretty significant opposition. There was 75 letters of opposition from different conservation groups when they did a public public request for input, mm-hmm. versus one letter supporting the road. Yet they're still moving forward with it. It just shatters me. And then 2 weeks ago, we also learned, that's the second one, they're now trying to also drive a 3 mile bridge, an extension of County Road 81 through the Choctawhatchee River, and just another place that's absolutely pristine. These different waterways are unique. I shouldn't leave these out, but we have what are called coastal dune lakes in the area. Mm-hmm. And the only places in the globe that you'll find these things are Australia, New Zealand, Madagascar, and then Walton County. And these are freshwater lakes that are literally only 100 or 200 yards away from the Gulf of Mexico. So they get a wonderful infusion of brackish water every now and again. So what makes it really special, say, for the angler, is you can go out there, you can catch largemouth bass and sunfish in one area, move 50 yards into another place where you could see the change in the water and start catching redfish and flounder. So when you start putting paved structures all through this area, you're increasing the odds for additional pollution and garbage and runoff and all those things that you just know over time it's going to degrade that area. Like I said, guys, I'll talk to you about this 20 minutes. I don't want to take any more time, but what we'd really like people to do is get involved. They can go to backcountryhunters.org, click on Take Action. If you then scroll to the bottom of Take Action, you will see a map. Click on Florida, and you'll see a place where anybody can just fill in their contact information and send an email to the Walton County Commissioners to help oppose this progress.
Yeah, I think it's a vital thing. I encourage everybody to go do that. Definitely really apparent why, you know, I think as hunters and anglers, like, this is something that we should be opposed to, not coming outright. I won't feed my opinions to you, but I will tell you my opinions, that, you know, the unique ecosystem that Florida is already very challenged by the many infrastructures we've put across this state. And if we have the ability to sort of thwart a plan that's not agreed upon by many, many, many experts and well-educated people, then, you know, I think it's good to do due diligence to go, just like Jim said, go head over to the BHA website and follow those links to show your opposition. We'd love the support. I know the state of Florida would love the support. The fishermen and anglers out there would also love the support. So I'll say this real quick. Any of you guys, Jeff, welcome. You're welcome to chime in as well. Do you guys have any questions for Jim?
Jim, you do have an article about this on the website already, correct?
I do. Thank you very much. You published it a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Thank you very much. It's just a 500-word summary on some of the things that are going on. And if I could just wrap this into one sentence, especially for your Florida listeners, if they can succeed in establishing the precedent to push a road through these WMAs, with the population growth we have in Florida, your WMAs are next. It may not be for 2 years, 3 years, or 10 years, but once that precedent's established, it'll never go away.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. Well, we'll leave it at that. You see the severity of the situation. Judge yourself if you should take action. We hopefully you're leaning towards the yes. Thanks, Jim, for coming on and chatting with us this evening and sharing the story there. We'll all get on it. I know that's my first stop is to double check that I've double clicked on that box.
Thanks for your support.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty stoked we had Jim on, and he was able to share some great, I mean, great content, great news. Maybe not great news, just some news in general that I think that everybody needs to have.
Good information.
Good information. There we go. Good information that everybody needs to have readily available to sort of action. So, but now we get to talk about the main meat of the show, which is our guest, who I'm going to introduce. So our guest today, hunter, angler, and wild food cook. He's also a contributor at Harvesting Nature, actually field staff writer at this point, field staff writer at Harvesting Nature. And he also writes for several other publications, so congratulations on some of those as well. I know that's recent developing news, and I'm pretty stoked to see those deals happen. But so Jeff celebrates local fishing game, and he likes to promote bright and achievable recipes that are designed to build confidence for new cooks and kind of well-seasoned cooks alike. And if you've looked and seen Jeff's work on Instagram or on the Harvest of Nature website, you can see that it's very much a work of art. It's makes you want to eat the phone or eat the computer screen or any of that. So the presentation's great. The recipes are great. I am super excited to chat with him this evening about all things food. So I introduce you all to our field staff writer, Jeff Benda. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Long time listener, first time guest.
So nice. Love it. So I will say, if you could, for those that, I mean, we have a little bit, you got a little bio going, we got a bio for you, but can you give us some more details sort of on yourself, where you're from, what got you in the outdoors, all those great things like that, so that we know our listeners can understand who they're talking with or listening to. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, my dad was in the Air Force, so I was actually born in North Carolina, and then and my mom's from the Tampa, Florida area. That's how they met. My dad was stationed in MacDill. But my dad got stationed in North Dakota when I was 7, so we moved here back in the 80s. And, it was one of those places really being confined to the air base not venturing out too far. But I dreamed about the outdoors. My dad he didn't really take us fishing. There was no hunting. So I read all those books, My Side of the Mountain and Sign of the Beaver and Island of the Blue Dolphins, like all these hunting, gathering, like, you know, young people getting, being out on their own. And I just, that's what I yearned for, you know, just this adventure of the outdoors. And, it just wasn't happening for me other than the Boy Scouts. I mean, that was my kind of my limit to camping. My first jobs were working in restaurants. So since the age of 15, and as soon as I graduated high school, I was doing restaurants, ran away to Minnesota, worked resorts in Minnesota, Florida, ran away to Florida twice. And anyway, ended up coming back here and finished up my last year of college. I got introduced to some guys and asked if I wanted to go hunting with them. So I took my hunter safety. It was like 2002, and I took my hunter safety and I went on my first hunt. And that was a duck hunt. And I was hooked from that moment. I absolutely fell in love with it, and then started pheasant hunting, and was supposed to go off and go back to Florida and actually be a high school teacher. And I stayed in North Dakota, and one of the main things was just that hunting, and that that door had just opened up for me the year before. And so I stayed, and been here ever since, hunting and fishing. So
at what point did you sort of marry the two together, the hunting and the cooking?
I mean, my first, I don't even remember. I reached out to the guys actually too, because I was wondering, like, what did we even do with those first ducks? And I think it was just that my buddy Don called them tasty duck treats, TDTs, but it was that, you know, wrapped in bacon with a pickled jalapeno and onion in the middle, and sprinkled with some
poppers.
Tonys. And threw them on the grill. We didn't do the cream cheese. I know everybody does cream cheese, but we didn't do the cream cheese. We still don't. But that's what we
did
with that.
I respect the Tonys, though. Like, right on. Yeah. Tony Satcher's where it's at.
Yep. I always have two containers, big containers, in the house at all times. That's the minimum amount we have. And then the pheasant, that first pheasant was that throw in a crock pot with cream of mushroom soup and nothing exciting. My first deer was, you know, it was just burger and some steaks, and that wasn't even too exciting. So it wasn't until, but I loved the hunting aspect of it. And I loved cooking, and I didn't, but it was my wife who, you know, I cooked all these, you know, what she thought were these great meals. And I took a lot of time and a lot of effort when we were first dating, and then even just being married, and then, but not doing anything with the wild game. So it was just in the last few years that I, listening, like picking up Hank Shaw's cookbooks, and, mm-hmm. And then joining that hunt, gather, cook Facebook group, that just opened my eyes to why am I spending all this time and effort and money on buying all these different, foods to create all these recipes and not using the wild game in my freezer, right? I don't know what I was doing. So I combined the two and started cooking for her. And now we have a 5.5-year-old daughter, who loves wild game. And so I just kind of, have transformed our, I'm proud to say I've formed a home environment where the word supper is synonymous with the words antelope, deer, duck, and goose. So
they are
converts. Yeah, they are converts. Yeah.
I saw actually it's your recipe that came out today, the Southern Fried Rabbit, and I like the headline that I think that Ben put with it was that that your wife wasn't a fan of rabbit at all until she tried this dish.
Yeah, she would never try it before, and I had cooked it a few different ways, so she ate it, she tried it, so she loves fried chicken. She'll probably not venture into it again, but she ate it that one time, so
it works.
She's a big antelope.
One time.
Yeah, that's right. It's just like our daughter, right? You have to try the food at least once. You have to try it.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife and my daughter will tell everyone that antelope is their favorite meat now.
That's awesome. So that's my favorite meat too. So
yeah, that's cool.
I didn't mean that. Sounded very self-centered, but I appreciate it when everyone loves antelope meat, because I think it's a very underappreciated meat, and it bothers me the times that I've been to Wyoming and like talked to the locals there, and they're like, shoot them all, like, we don't want them here.
Yeah,
I was like, why are you not capitalizing on this amazing resource that you have in your backyard? And they're like, bah, whatever.
Yeah, Exactly.
They also told me they don't like to eat mule deer either, and I was, I don't know.
Nope, I shoot those too. So
yeah.
Yeah, I got a couple of those this year.
Yeah, man, I missed one, but anyway.
Jeff, it doesn't seem like you've been doing this for too long. Well, at least not on your Instagram. But recently, it seemed like you've really gotten more popular. You've been on a couple different podcasts. I know you're on the Hunt of War podcast, which Justin was on. I think I was on last year as well. And we had Nick on here. And then you were recently on Food of Field podcast. But what do you think has attributed to your growing popularity? I have an idea, but what do you think?
Oh, I just love to hear it from Corey, but no, I think honestly, please tell me. I think it was the Instagram, because I mean I was posting stuff I've been posting stuff for ever since I started this on Hunt Gather Cook, right? On mm-hmm. Hank Shaw's Facebook group. But I think then when it was Justin who reached out to me, you know, you reached out to me and said, you know, hey, would you like to write some recipes for us on Harvesting Nature? And then you mentioned Instagram, and I'm like, Instagram? I don't do Instagram. But then that's when I first went on there, and I was like, oh, I do have an Instagram account. I just don't use it, right? And some old students had actually had me open up an account a few years ago. But anyway, so I deleted all that stuff from that one trip where I took students on a trip and they had me open up an account and post it. And then I started putting my pictures and recipes on Instagram. And I think that's when things, you know, people started seeing the pictures on there and saw that and started reaching out to me. But what are your thoughts, Corey?
Yeah, I want to hear that. Corey, what are your thoughts?
I love going through your Instagram feed, because everything is just so well thought out and it looks delicious. And I want to know your secret to taking those pictures, because Justin and I are working on a recipe together, because I'm the one that had bear in my freezer. I was the one that was cooking, and I was the one that had to take the pictures, and I had to get Justin on FaceTime, and no, you got to do it this way, you got to do it that way, you got to do it this, and like at one point, you know, I'm three beers in, and I'm like, okay, I think this is good enough, but I don't know how you can do that on a consistent basis and just make it look so good.
Well, it's Instagram, so not all the photos that I take end up getting posted, right? Because it's like, if it's the wrong time of day, you don't get that natural light. But then, you know what's crazy is the pictures got better when my wife would come home and you know, if I got home my daughter and I'd be home and I'd be working on a recipe and making dinner for those two, and I'd have these, you know, the kind of professional lights, but the things I bought on Amazon and set up in the kitchen and the dining room, and she's like, what is happening right now? And that started happening like night after night. So they actually put together for my birthday back in January, my wife and daughter, they kind of set me up a little studio in the basement. So I've been banned to the basement for my photos. And the lighting, or the lack of lighting, I guess, it's this perfect little space that takes good photos. So, yeah. So, Corey, you need to be banished to the basement. Find the darkest corner of your basement. And you know, have it the right time of day where you get that natural light. Like, I mean, I've dragged dishes outside.
Yeah, when I was FaceTiming Justin, I was in the middle of the hay field next to the house.
I wish your wife would have took a picture of you like out there over this board, like trying to take a picture with your phone.
Oh yeah,
it would have been hilarious. Done it.
Little haystacks and like corn stalks next to it, make it look all earthy and rustic. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the same with recipes too. I mean, you know, some of the stuff that I make, it you know, I have this concept in my head and I try it and it just does not turn out. I don't know, like I've been doing a lot of stuff with the catfish the last few weeks that I went out and caught a bunch after my my failed turkey attempt. And but I had caught a bunch of suckers with it too and tried to smoke those, and the first recipe, like the first thing I tried to make, I just, the smell, and my wife's like, I don't know, what are you thinking? I'm like, man, I had all kinds of plans and ideas written down for these, and I just, no, let's light some candles and get the smell out of the house, and we have to abandon ship on these, so let's stick with the catfish. Yeah, it's just playing around with different lighting. It took me a long time, and it's just kind of, I just have this, it's just playing around with, I don't even play around a lot with the settings, but,
Do you make like an extra dish just to photo? Because as I'm making stuff, it's like, I want to eat it while it's hot. I don't want to take pictures of it.
Yeah. So kind of how I do that, my wife now knows that generally the dish that's going to get that I'm taking the photos of, because my daughter doesn't, you know, my wife wants hot food, right? My daughter doesn't want hot food and she doesn't really care. Like it's whether it even like a soup, you know, instead of like, we want hot soup, but instead of putting a little ice cube in there. So like, generally my daughter gets the dish. And then she gets the pretty dish, right? So, you know, so the little bit more decorated. So yeah, I'll make that dish that for the photo. I'll run it downstairs, try to get the photo. But you know, I'm not going to sit there and spend 10, 20 minutes. Like I literally have take the shot, try to get a wider shot. I might do both the phone, because that would be okay for Instagram or Facebook. But then if it's going to be something I'm going to submit to a magazine, like I need to, like if it's just got that look and I'm like, yeah, I think this would be maybe magazine worthy, then I'm going to use the good camera just because of the quality. And I mean, it's not a great camera. It's just a Canon Rebel, but it's one we bought when our daughter was born, right? So we could take good photos. But it's just got that higher quality of a photo. And then and try to get some wider, you know, because they might want to crop it. So if you're going to try and submit those recipes, you want to get a little bit of a wider shot. So just turning the plate too, like I'm going to turn the plate like four times and get every single angle. And then the key to having your family keep their sanity and you have a happy marriage is then set your phone down, don't look at those pictures, and then go sit down and have dinner, have supper with your family and enjoy, mm-hmm. and then help with bedtime, and then spend time with your wife. And then I get up at 5 a.m. and then I go through those and you know, see what I can do with them.
Hot so, tip.
That's the secret of all photography with wild game cooking is then set the phone down and don't spend the whole night going through those pictures and driving yourself crazy on maybe I didn't get a good shot. So, yeah.
Do you ever feel though, like, oh man, the moment, like I didn't get a good photo and now the moment is gone because the plate's consumed.
Yes. Yep.
That's what
I have to start all over.
it's like an anxiety point for me. I'm like, oh man, if I don't get this, it's gonna, cause you know, people that don't do food photography, you don't think about this, like, but when the food goes cold, the colors change, the textures change, you know, even like down to the shininess of the food, like, so you have a small window to be like, this is prime photo time right now, to take it. And yeah.
And there's different software and there's different filters that you maybe can have on your phone, that can help with that a little bit. I would just you know try to go through those and maybe go through a filter on your phone if you're taking pictures like that, and then maybe you can find one that really works for you every time. You know, and then just kind of play around with that too.
Mm-hmm.
So
I try every time I shoot, I try it. My goal is to shoot a photo with at least the least amount of editing as possible.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a challenge, but
yeah, definitely. Yep.
I do want to talk about some of your recipes. So we already mentioned the Southern Fried Rabbit recipe today. That was a pretty solid one. Definitely excited about that. I'm going to give that one a go. Let's talk a little bit about some goose here. The Canada Goose Gondi. I think I'm pronouncing it right.
Yeah, it was like it's like a matzo ball soup, but it's the Persian Jews call it Gondi.
Mm-hmm.
Gondi. So that's where I just stumbled on that. I was trying to just, you know, I don't know if I've talked about, like, so my daughter is 5 and I go through the, so I take her to the library every week. Mm-hmm. And her goal is to, when the print off, she always pushes the buttons, you know, so it prints off and it gives you all the titles. And she looks for that number. She wants at least 20 books. She just devours them. Actually, tonight, we actually had a pretty rough night. leading up to bedtime. And I took one of her books away as punishment. So, because we'll usually do three or four books. And every night. So she goes and gets all of her books. And then I go and I get cookbooks. And I've gone through our branch here right by the house. I've gone through every single cookbook, all the plant-based. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do those. But the plant-based recipe cookbooks. But so now we've moved to the big branch in Fargo here in North Dakota, and so we're cruising through those. So my goal is really to go through all of those. But I just find inspiration, like an idea. Like it might mm-hmm. just even be like a name of something, and I might go in a completely different direction, But yeah, that's where I stumbled upon the Gandhi.
What's your best takeaway to modify recipes you find in the cookbooks to sort of fit the wild game? Because, you know, a lot of people are very familiar with the fact that wild fish and game is oftentimes very different than domestic game, and the majority of cookbooks are domestic game, domestic meats.
Yeah.
And the majority of cookbooks are written towards domestic meat or, you know, different types of fish and seafood and all that. What's your methodology behind that?
It's not consistent. It's like the hot and sour soup. I think I did that today. So like mm-hmm. the recipe that I found was tofu. Right, and I ended up putting an antelope in there.
So you are in the plant-based books.
No. That was just an Asian cooking. That was just an Asian cooking recipe book. Yeah, but I think quote from the Dalai Lama: "Learn and obey the rules very well, so you will know how to break them properly." I like that quote. So, you can go with the lamb. I think just like if you find stuff with lamb, antelope goes well with that. That was just kind of what I've heard other people say, but I don't know. You can kind of play around with it. Like I think I've cooked enough where I can look at a recipe, and I've read so many cookbooks, and I've tried. I have stacks. Like you guys, I have bookshelves. I used to have an office before I changed jobs 2 years ago. So I had an office where I could hide all my books, and then when I lost my office, and now I drive for work. Like I came home with these boxes and boxes of books, and my wife is like, "What's happening right now?" So she's had to try to limit me. But I just yeah, there's no fast and hard rules, Justin. I would say like finding success is a like wild game recipe cook, you know, creator or cook. You know, I live here in North Dakota, so I'm going to throw out like a hockey metaphor. So like a hockey player, they move forward by actually moving from side to side. So when I think, so the exceptions kind of are the new rules. So like as a home cook, I can make my own rules. And all those years working in restaurants and having a catering business, like you, I had more flexibility when I had my own catering business. But in that restaurant setting, and I think you would know this, you worked in restaurant, like you have to follow that recipe, right? Like mm-hmm. the head chef is like, he's the, you know, he had that creative thing, or maybe you're working with a streamlined restaurant, but you're given this recipe and you follow that recipe and you do the same thing every day. And I just love having that freedom now. It's just my creative outlet. So, sorry, it took a really long time to go way around that question.
No.
You asked me.
There are no fast and hard rules.
I think. Yeah, I think there are no fast and hard rules. I think you can just do so many different things. So,
I think, yeah, you know, I've mentioned this before. Like people get nervous to start stepping outside the box a lot with Wild Game too. And you know, that's something you're focused on changing. It's something we're always constantly trying to change. And I think I like to see it when the motivation's there to be like, you know what, let's just do this. Let's try it. And not necessarily maybe the thought's not there of like, oh my gosh, this is ground antelope and I don't want to, you know, mess this up because you have to. That's like any kitchen thing. It's like working the kitchen or cooking in the kitchen is like about 80% confidence and about 20% of understanding you're going to make mistakes and just dealing with it.
Yeah, I think following a recipe when you're even just first starting it, like you need to use your level of experience, feel, and whatever you have on hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just going to be a home cooks, we enjoy this great creative flexibility, right? When you get to cook and with and for your loved ones. And I think it's just a lot of fun. So, yeah. And you know what the secret is to every, the secret to having better wild game recipes. I don't know if you know this, Justin, there's like that one ingredient. This is a trick question. Yeah. Like if you play Otis Redding, have Otis Redding, like Otis Redding's greatest hits in the background, you will cook better, just so you know. I'm just
really?
Yeah.
On
that's my secret. Yeah, you don't see it on
streaming.
Well, you just ask Alexa, but yeah. That's my secret. So Corey, actually why I think my stuff turns out better is that I tend to have a lot of Otis Redding or that type of music going when I try to have fun in the kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah.
And usually the girls are dancing at the same time. So
that's good, yeah. Man. I love the family involvement that you incorporate into this. It makes me so very happy. I try to get my daughter involved in as much as I can about the cooking and hunting, and she's 8. So she's there. She takes an interest sometimes, and then at the end of the day, she just wants to eat. And she's like, I don't really care what you're doing, Dad. Go take your pictures. Come back. I just want to eat it.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of fun.
But that's good. That's good that it's, as I tell Corey all the time, it's got to be fun. If it's not fun, what are we doing?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, Justin, you're down in Key West.
Yep.
So have you actually seen, I'm just going to throw this out there now, have you seen like Fogarty Avenue, Fogarty Lane? Are you familiar with those streets?
Yes.
That's my family actually is Fogarty.
Really?
Yeah. So my, So they left the Keys and went to where Bradenton, Florida is.
Okay.
Bradenton, Florida, my great-great-grandfather was the first homesteader and county commissioner for Manatee County.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, yeah, so Fogartyville is now Bradenton, Florida. And then they ended up in Tampa. But the reason I bring this up is Captain John Fogarty, his secret for fishing, tarpon, figured you would appreciate this. There's a book written on this, a family history about Fogartyville. He would go out in a little skiff, and he would catch a tarpon, but he'd be by himself. And if you tried to tie the fish on the side of the boat, you know, you'd have an issue with sharks. So he would scuttle the boat and sink it, you know, fill it with water so he could get the big fish into the boat, and then he would bail out the water and then get back to shore. That's how he would get his fish back.
What?
Yes. So there are photos of that. So, like, I just
that's some real Florida man stuff. And I love
it's
that.
Like
I love
this amazing. So, yeah. So for me, when I'm out there, when I'm out there hunting antelope or mule deer, and I'm, you know, lost or having this crazy backcountry experience, and I'm trying to push myself, I'm like, dude, this is nothing compared to stuff that he did back in the, you know, a very long time ago. You know, he was a shipbuilder. But pretty, like, that takes guts. So, yeah. And that was a long time ago. Yeah.
And I mean, too, if you're thinking about it, you're catching a tarpon big enough to put in a dinghy, like, tarpon are pretty wild fish. Yeah. Like, they fight like crazy, and they're big. I mean, the older ones, the really old ones, are big. Like, it's not like, oh, yeah, I'm going to have this, like, foot and a half tarpon, so I'm going to flood my boat. No, it's like, this thing's probably the size of his, like, the length of his dinghy or whatever he's taking out.
Yeah, I'll have to try and find that photo and send it to you, because there's one photo of this. But that's
Please
pretty
do.
Epic.
That's awesome.
So you talk about a fishing story, that there's some pretty cool fishing stories in my family history there. So, yeah.
Oh, man, that's so rad. I couldn't imagine, too, like, the Florida Keys at that time period, you know, when those guys were coming down here and setting up shop and doing all those crazy wild things like that. Like, this place, you think about the wild, wild west being rough, but, like, the Florida Keys, you're, like, 100-something miles from the nearest anything that resembles any point of civilization. The only way to get out of there is by boat.
Yeah. Or train, right? They had a train that went down there for a while. And that
I mean, this would be before the train. This is when people were just sailing down here.
So, Jeff, like, does your family have connection to Fogarty's restaurant, or is the Fogarty's restaurant named after the streets?
I don't know. Because they actually...
I lived in Key West until last summer, too. That's where Justin and I actually linked up. But yeah.
Yeah, and I used to live on... we still have a house in Tampa. My parents do. So I go down there. We go down there every year. But I used to live in Fort Myers and then out on Captiva Island. And we used to take... we used to take one of those boats down to the Keys.
The
high-speed catamaran.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we used to go down there and get into trouble. And I think that's I'm not familiar with the Fogarty's restaurant. But that's the name. Yeah, that's the same namesake. I've seen the spelling of it.
It's right there on Duval Street, you know, main drag and everything. So I don't know if it had any kind of connection. It seems like it's kind of a placehold.
Yeah, I don't know how many years. I haven't been there in a long time, so I don't know how new. I don't know how old that restaurant is.
Yeah, I don't know
either. I'm very familiar with Duval Street. Yeah, so,
as am I.
That's where we spend all our time.
Actually, my dog is named Duval after that street. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I think that was one of my favorite things too about I worked on South Seas Plantation on Captiva, and you know, you're standing in I used to fish in a tuxedo because we after our shift. Well, yeah, because we had this tea dock right outside. I was in the fine dining restaurant. You know, there's different sections of the restaurant, and so we would have like this bucket of shrimp tied up to the tea dock, and so then when we finished up, you know, waiting on all these people, At the end of the night, then we'd go out and try to catch snook off the tee dock, but we'd still be mm-hmm. in our tuxes. So, yeah, that's I do, awesome. You know, yeah. Fishing in a tuxedo on an island off the coast of Florida, that's, yeah. Yeah.
Many, you may many have years just ago. Coined the title there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think that's the title of the episode.
Yeah. All right, anyway, we can get back to hunting. So
no worries. I like the fishing story. That's a sweet. It's a sweet, yeah. Sweet connection, though. I really, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and I think the Tampa connection too. So I do a lot of Cuban. Oh, have you guys had the like devil crab, like Tampa style mm-hmm. devil crab?
Yes.
It's my mom's birthday. Colin, you haven't. Yeah, it's if you look it up, anyway, it's Tampa-style devil crab. It's kind of like the size. It's not the size of a football. It's the shape of a football. But it'd be like kind of the size of your fist. And it's the first thing I get. I go to this little Cuban place. The first, before we even get to the house, when we land, when the plane lands in Tampa, we go and stop at this little Cuban place. And we get devil crab and some yellow rice and chicken and roasted pork. But these devil crabs, I'm actually going to recreate it. It's my mom's birthday this Saturday, and I already told her about it. She's actually pretty excited. But I'm going to use some of the catfish that I caught and I smoked. And so we're going to, but I'm going to follow the traditional recipe from the Columbia restaurant in Tampa that I have in a couple different cookbooks here. And so we're going to make those Tampa style devil crab with the catfish. So. It's that kind of stuff. Like I see a recipe and I'm like, you know, I know it's my mom's favorite food, and trying sneaking in wild game or fish, because she's probably one of the most skeptical. That's the person I haven't really completely won over. So
not yet.
Yeah.
Not until her birthday when you win her over with the catfish.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
So I do want to talk about this this pickled northern. I'm going to add in the word pike in there in parentheses. Under a fur coat like that. That recipe is so visually appealing with the layers and the way that you stacked it. Like I just, it's so great. let's chat. So just what was in your mind? Like where did, yeah.
So I was listening to a cooking podcast and this gal from Russia was being interviewed and she mentioned, so I'm driving down the road. I drive for work now. And I'm out on the road. So I'm listening to podcasts like you guys, and, you know, and other cooking podcasts and hunting podcasts and audiobooks. But this gal would mention this pickled herring under a fur coat. And she started describing it. It's a shuba salad. She started describing it with, you know, it had pickled beets. I'm like, oh, well, my wife likes pickled beets. And we do a lot of pickled northern. So I thought, well, how hard would it be just to substitute pickled northern for pickled herring? So so I looked up the recipe and I'm like, this looks cool. So I just, it was something that I heard mentioned on a podcast by a gal being interviewed on Russian food. And that's where I got the idea for that. So, yeah.
It's so cool. And that one's slated to go out in Outdoor News, right? As well, I think.
That one's going to be a catfish recipe, actually.
Oh, I thought Evie was picking that one up. But anyway, okay.
Yeah, I think she went with that one. So.
Okay, no worries.
Yep.
Bang Bang G Rabbit.
Well, I was again going through a cookbook and I saw Bang Bang G and I go, man, there's a wild game recipe in this somewhere with that name. So I don't even know what the original was. It was a Bang Bang G chicken, I think.
Let's see what Bang Bang G is. Oh yeah, it's like chicken. Bang Bang G, the authentic Szechuan.
Yeah, it was a Szechuan
hot cookbook. And numbing.
It was a Bang Bang Ji. I found it in a Szechuan recipe cookbook at the library and said, I got to do something with this. And then was at my in-laws. We got that rabbit, and I'm like, well, let's do this. So
how hot did you make it?
Yeah, not that spicy. So again, I'm cooking for my wife and who will eat some spicy, but my daughter, I really try to tone it down. I like all the recipes, you know, like I used to work at a Mexican restaurant, down in Fort Myers is one of the restaurants I worked at. And, so love Mexican food, but like some of the stuff like Hank Shaw does, he's on that Mexican food kick. Mm-hmm. And I cannot do like, I love Hank Shaw recipes. But I can't follow like with some of the chipotle peppers and things like that. I'm always having to adjust stuff like that and keep my family in mind. So, and then I can just add stuff, you know, on the side, you know, extra peppers and spice.
So out of all the cookbooks that you've browsed, which one stands out as like, I like this one the most?
My favorite?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll say that.
A Field.
Ooh. Nice. I like it.
Yes, that is my favorite. Yeah, Jesse Griffiths. That's my current favorite one. Absolutely.
Have you pre-ordered the Hog Book?
No, and I went on that website. There's the one that was advertised on the Meat Eater. Mm-hmm. And I went on there and I, you know, it's tag season right now, so all my available funding is waiting to see on tags. But but now I just got my North Dakota elk tag for $5.
Oh yeah, congrats for that. That's a pretty tough one to draw, right?
Well, so in North Dakota, so it's a once in a lifetime for your tag, and whether you get it or not, you get a once in a lifetime tag. But a bull tag in the unit that I applied for, and this is out by Medora, like it's in the Badlands. It's where Theodore Roosevelt hunted elk, and that's where I want to hunt elk. And we camp out there, and I'm very familiar with the area, and I hunt deer and antelope south of this. But it's a 1% chance to get a bull tag. And every year you start over. Like there's not preference points or bonus points. And when it comes to moose, bighorn, sheep, and elk in North Dakota, it's resident only. You start over every year. You know, you're on that even playing field. But you only have a 1% chance to get drawn for bull, and it's a 50% chance for cow elk. Huh. I'm like, okay, well, at some point I'm gonna want to shoot a bull. But I can go do that in Montana or Wyoming. You know, I can wait a few years and build up points, and I can do that, you know, get a general draw. But I just wanted to have this experience, and before I get too old and I can't go, it's a big country. You know, I hike out there. And I wanted to be able to do it and have that adventure and try to and monopolize on the connections that I have on some of the other, like, some of the other guys that I know are big bow hunters out there.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do it now. And so I went ahead and got the cow elk, and it was successful. So it's September 1st until the end of December. So it's a long season for rifle. So
do you have any, recipes already planned?
No, I haven't. Like I just can't even wrap my head around it, yet. It's still fresh. Yeah, I'm still trying to get stuff around. I've got a lot of antelope in my freezer still in venison, so I'm still trying to come up with creative ways, you know, new things for that. I had to revisit some other ones, you know, that maybe I didn't get a good photo for. A photo of the first time.
You know, that was wisdom I got from Hank Shaw. I was like, if you don't like the photo, just remake it. And I was like, what?
Yeah, so. And sometimes I'm like, why haven't I come back? And like, I went back on that some of my old posts on that, on his group, and I'm like, oh yeah, I made that, and that was really good. The photo looks like crap, but yeah, I should remake that again. And but you know, and my wife and daughter loved it, so yeah, why am I not coming back and making this again? So yeah.
So do you have anything on your radar that you're going to be excited about trying here soon? Not to give away any hot details on your recipes, but
There's a yellow, you know, one of those Lego pads.
Mm-hmm.
And there's pages and pages of ideas. Yeah, I've got a, like a, there's like a, the Columbia restaurant out of Tampa that, that Cuban food, there's some recipes in there that I really want to try. I want to try to, they have such great chorizo, and I just haven't been able to get the chorizo like the chorizo I can get in Tampa. And I'm still working on that. It's just so much better there, and I don't know if I'm ever going to accomplish that. So that's a goal of mine. And, some of the Louisiana recipes, that I've got, that I've got a cookbook, like an old family cookbook, and trying to pull some stuff out of that. Yeah, I got a lot of ideas. I got a million ideas, but, and I mean, I drive around and I listen to, you know, all these cooking podcasts and things, and just, it just, I keep getting new ideas every day. So the list is just getting longer, and my time, in all this, I have to make sure I keep that balance, right?
Yeah.
A family time, you know, I've got my job and I need to go do my job and do it well. I'm at a job that I don't have to take anything home with me. So when I leave my job, I can leave it there. And I never had that before until 2 years ago. So I think this job is just, it gives me that flexibility and that opportunity. But, not just a mediocre one, but a great husband and father is my number one priority. And then my passion for hunting and cooking, you know, they support it, and they appreciate the fruits of it. So, which I think is a great gift. And so they can be a part of it. And so, yeah, I'll just keep doing it. As long as I have that balance. And right now I have that perfect balance. And it brings me peace and joy, and so I'll keep doing it as long as I can. Yeah.
I like it. It's honorable, man. The whole principle behind it that you've got. I love it.
Yeah.
Let's see. So, what is the best way for people to connect with you? I know we've talked about Instagram. We've talked about Hank Shaw's Facebook page. Anywhere else, or the best way?
No, I would say Instagram. I know, like, up until December, I didn't have it. So I wasn't on Instagram, but yeah, there's that. I've got the ND, like for North Dakota, ND Wild Game Cook. That's on Instagram. I keep my Facebook page private. I mean, I'll post on different groups, but like my actual Facebook page, I keep, you know, for just family and friends. And yeah, so I'd say Instagram. You know,
we're definitely loving what you post in the community page. I love seeing your recipes go in there. So any listeners out there?
Yes, and I always make sure I post.
Listeners out there, you get us.
Go ahead and give the name, Corey.
Sneak peek to Jeff's recipes and amazing pictures in the Wild Fish and Game community page.
Yeah, in the Wild Fish and Game community page, I will post all of my recipes that I do on Instagram. They're all posted on that, so you can also visit that page. And I really appreciate that, what you guys are doing there.
Yeah, yeah,
and everything on the Harvesting Nature on the website. Yeah, it's great content.
I really am enjoying that community page. The more and more I see stuff pop up on it, because I'm a member of some other groups and stuff on Facebook, but not to toot our own horn, I think we're doing a good job of like putting that together, and the people that have joined it, and they're all putting out some great stuff. So I think it's a fun place to just interact.
Yeah, and I would just say too, I think using any of that social media, and whether it's on Instagram or, but I've seen more of it on Facebook. You know, not everybody's going to post those like great pictures, because some people just, mm-hmm. some people don't care. Like they cooked something and it was so delicious and they posted the picture of it. Yeah. And they don't, it's not for Instagram, right? They're proud of it. And I think, it bothers me. It just really bugs me that people, when they post, are like, man, that looks disgusting. Right. Or like, God forbid and this happens to me all the time. If I try to use beets or avocados, holy Hannah, man, there are haters. Like, it's like,
oh yeah.
It's, oh man. Or
don't put beans in your chili.
yeah. Anything like that. But I mean, just like, it's like just from Bambi, right? Like, if you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. Like, come on. Like, you don't have to crucify somebody. Like, they may not have the best photo, but I think I take time to, it just sounds good, right? It may be a fuzzy, grainy picture, or they put a bunch of sauce or gravy on it, but like, that's okay. Like, they're proud of it. And they, I think some of the stuff that, whether it's hunting photos or cooking photos, I think for those of us who are when you guys are on those pages, be supportive and like take time to like click a like, or you know, like that person yep. took the time, and sometimes it's scary to post things and they're hesitant, but I think we need to support each other, and it's not always gonna, like, I have epic fails, like that fish that sunk up the whole house. There's a lot, like half the stuff that I cook tastes delicious. But it just doesn't, like the photo, it just doesn't, I'm like, man, that's just not going to look good. Right. It's just not like a photo. It's, I don't know. It doesn't make a good photo, but it tastes delicious. But there's people that are posting those same kind of things on Facebook. And I'm like, good for you. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't care. And I think, yeah, I think we just need to support them. I think it's the same thing with hunting, that we need to support each other in this community and let people get creative and let people do what they want to do, and don't hold them to these fast, hard rules. I think that we've kind of locked ourselves into. So.
Wait. Yep. Yep. I agree. I think, and if you think about it, it's like somebody going into a room full of 30,000 people. You know, some of these groups are big. Ours is not, but not yet. And you know, somebody's like, "Hey, come check out what I made, guys! Like, come over here at the table and look at this." And then just there's 30,000 people that are like, what'd you do there? Oh, well, that piece of parsley's a little bit off. Well, you put beans in your chili. Oh, well, you know, and you know, yeah. Half the comments are very critical, and you know, I agree. More support's there, but before you're quick to throw a questionable comment, think about that. About if you're the guy in the room or gal in the room presenting to 30,000 people, like, holy smokes!
Yeah, and I think too. You know, one great way too, if your family really appreciates your recipes, like that one year we went through 4 antelope and we ran out. That first year that I aged the antelope, I got it all on ice and I did it right. We burned through because the girls were just eating it like crazy. So, you know, when you can use your cooking and your family loves it, and now my wife's like, you know, we might need more than 4. And I'm like, you know what, honey? I'm gonna go out and get more tags, like, right? I'm gonna start applying for South Dakota and Montana and And I'm going to do it. I'm going to shoot for, yeah, whatever I need to do to get more venison and more antelope. So, yeah. And I'm a doe hunter, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, cheaper tags makes it more, you know, if I get a buck tag, the only buck tag I'm applying for is in North Dakota because it's the same price and I have a pretty good chance of getting a tag. But yeah, I mean, other than that, you can, I think just taking that opportunity and going out and having that adventure and I think it's a great opportunity and you can do it for very reasonable. I mean, Justin, mm-hmm. I know you go out to Wyoming for antelope, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. You can get 4 doe tags and your license for less than 1 buck tag.
Yeah. So, it's insane. I got a buck tag last year and I was just looking at it and we were talking this year as we're planning. I was waiting to see if AJ drew New Mexico tags and he didn't. So now we're shuffling around our plans for this year and naturally I'm eyeing up Colorado's over the counter tags. They instituted a second drawing this year. There's over the counter tags. So the antelope tags there, the over the counter ones are archery only, which I thought was interesting. And I was like, I don't know. I'm going to give it a try. Just last year, both antelope I shot were one was over 120 and my buck I shot was under 30. So I was like, maybe I can pull it off. I don't know.
Yeah, all of mine have been, my first antelope, which was a buck in North Dakota, was 320 yards, and all of my Wyoming ones have been 100 and less, like maybe 150, a couple of them, but yeah, pretty close range. So
it's wild stuff, man. But yeah. All right. Well, I think unfortunately the clock is ticking down. I'm very much enjoying the conversation here. With that, at this point in the show, we give everybody the opportunity, any misfires, alibis, or saved rounds. So, Jeff, being that you're the guest on today, do you have a last note or thought for us or for the general world or a question or anything?
No, I would just say... yeah, I think for everybody out there just who wants to bring more opportunities for wild game cooking, I think just look at what your family eats on a regular basis. Like, ask what are their favorite recipes? Like, just take wild game out of the whole equation just for 5 minutes and just sit down and like look at what do they like to eat or sit down with your wife and like what are maybe you have a cookbook on the shelf or something, a joy of cooking or something, but like what sounds good or maybe what looks good, and then take that and then look in your freezer or plan on maybe something that you're going to hunt this year, this fall, and then try to incorporate that. But like just look at the quote unquote normal food that you eat and then just try to utilize it. You utilize that wild game and fish in those recipes. And I think that's a good basis for that, to really get your family on board with it.
Awesome. Great last thought. Corey, hard one to follow up, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, you know, what are your tips for creating or modifying recipes that suit the tastes of your family, especially your kids? And you just answered it for me, so... I'll just say thank you for coming on.
Yeah. And tone down the spices. I think that's the key thing. Make sure, Corey, that would be the thing too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Corey struggles with that because he likes spicy food.
Yeah. The boudin. I get the boudin all to myself.
Colin, what you got, man?
I don't have much to touch on that hasn't already been covered. Just wanted to thank Jeff for coming on the show and for all the great content that he's been putting out. I think there's a pretty large percentage of our most popular posts on social media that have been attributed to Jeff and from his contributions. So that's really awesome, the stuff that he's putting out. So it was a really good talk. And thanks for coming on.
I think for me, I'll echo the thanks for coming on. And super stoked we got to have the conversation. I know you and I have been talking more and more as of late and enjoying our conversations. I enjoyed the podcast you did with what was that, Food Afield?
Yeah, John Schneider up in Canada. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was a great one. I listened to that. Thanks for the kind words there, for sure. But yeah, overall, man, keep up the good work. It's really awesome. I love what you're doing. You definitely inspire me to dial in my stuff too and make sure everything's going well on my side of the cooking world. So it's awesome to see. So I love it. And I will say for everyone else out there, make sure you go check out Jeff's Instagram page. You're following him. Keep an eye out on our social media for all the great content that we're putting out, especially Jeff's recipes. Those rock. And being that it's turkey season, it's a great time to plug this one, our Wild Turkey Life Cycle shirts there. So if you haven't seen that yet, it's an awesome shirt. We've got it shirt and sweater form. Not many things in the world of art are done by Justin Townsend, but I can tell you that the artwork on that shirt is a Justin Townsend original, hand-drawn and hand-colored by your very own podcast host here. So it's a cool shirt. It goes from like chick to poult to full-grown gobbler to roasting pan, and it says the Wild Turkey Life Cycle on it, which I think is great. And if you're a fan of wild turkey meat, you should be a fan of that shirt. I am. All these recipes and links will be in the show notes, as always. And whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button and tell us what we're doing wrong or tell us what we're doing right. I will say 5 stars could get you a hat. Just think about that, too. Anyway, thanks, everybody, and have a good night.